AHC meeting, April 3rd, 2017.
Over the long haul, we have even bigger problems. Before the finance committee meeting last month, the general manager said to us that he's pretty much exhausted his ability to cut, to make administrative cuts and to make personnel cuts. So he doesn't see where he can cut the budget much more than he has. We obviously can't keep raising fares. Nobody in the world wants to do that. And the jurisdictions are balking already at double-digit increases every year in the amount of money they're asked to contribute. And I don't think anybody wants to see further cuts to service. So that's where we are right now. There's a couple of things that are going to happen, are going to need to happen. One is that once we get through SafeTrack, this has really been a hard year. It's going to continue to be a hard year right through the end of June with the safe track changes and the slowdowns and the single tracks and the shutting down stations. But once we get through that, we should see a higher level of service. Now, you know, the general manager keeps telling us to emphasize this is not going to solve all the problems. But what we hope is it sort of gets us over the hump, gets us to the point where we can say that things are getting better and not worse. So we hope we sort of turn the corner, get over the hump, whatever way you want to say it, at the end of the safe track program. And the other thing is that over the long term, we need another source of funding. We absolutely have to have funding coming from a different source, an additional source of the funding that we've got coming in now. The kinds of things that we've talked about is getting the Congress to put more dedicated funding. Now, the Congress has been funding the renovation of the service. We've got a couple more years of that that they promised, although it's been a fight every year to get that money to continue with the renovation. But maybe we could get some funding to help operate the system, too. Now, it is true that a large chunk of the people who ride the system, both bus and rail, and I assume maybe even Metro Access, during rush hour, are federal employees. And so the federal government really relies on Metro to move its employees to and from work. So it's not unreasonable to ask the federal government to perhaps put some more money into it. That being said, there's no surety that they actually would get that money. The other option is some kind of a dedicated revenue source, and I know this has been talked about for a number of years. We could do something like an additional property tax, an additional sales tax, something that was dedicated to funding Metro. Now, I know the Maryland legislature, there has been discussion of a regional sales tax in Montgomery and Prince George's County that would be imposed just in those two counties, and the revenue from which would be dedicated to Metro. That would be one thing that done, and it's something that looks like it's more feasible than other things that could happen, at least in Maryland. The District of Columbia has talked about something similar. I don't know where Virginia is, although they've got a Blue Ribbon Commission that they've just started to appoint people to that would look into these kinds of things. And I just wanted to make a plea to you all. We're going to have to, it's going to be hard to get a revenue source, a new revenue source through. Nobody wants to pay more taxes. Nobody wants to see service cuts either. And so I would ask you when these proposals for additional sales tax or whatever comes through, that you all act as sort of experienced experts. When people say, well, you know, why should we pay more for Metro? Aren't the fares covering it? Well, no, the fares aren't covering it. And you probably know that as well as everyone. You know, why don't the jurisdictions put in more money? Well, the jurisdictions are already reluctant, and I just don't see them funding double-digit increases every year going out into the indefinite future. So this is going to come to a general public discussion, and it would be really helpful if people who are knowledgeable about Metro, like you are, would engage in the discussion and talk to people about what the situation is. We'd also love to hear your input into the discussion of the board on this. The decisions on other sources of funding are generally going to be made outside the board. They're going to be made in the state legislatures and the DC Council. probably there's going to have to be support from the, in Maryland, I can tell you politically, there would have to be support from the two county councils in order to move this forward. But there's going to have to be public discussion about these kinds of issues, or they're not going to get through. And you all, being knowledgeable about Metro and knowing what services Metro provides and what sources of income, could be really helpful in sort of moving this discussion forward. And so, you know, I would be happy to talk to you about any information we could provide you that would be helpful in your talking to people about this. But I think, you know, because you're as knowledgeable as you are, I think we really need you to be a partner in helping us do this. So I'm happy to take any questions about that.
Thank
or
you
anything
very,
else.
Thank you very much. That's great. And yes, I think to your last statement, then I want to recognize members of the committee. To your last statement, I think that anything that you could share with us so that we can discuss it as a committee and come up with some solid recommendations, I think that would be great. And then I know, having served on this, with this committee, and then also with the Riders Advisory Committee, they're very much in the same, sort of the same mode, is that they want to be able to come up with recommendations that we can move forward on. And I think the more that we can look at joint recommendations coming before the board that AAC and also RAC agree on, I think that's good. And I think even specifically on the budget, the recommendations, I think, from the AAC and the RAC are pretty similar, and I'm pleased to see that. We didn't get everything we wanted, of course, but I think that the views on the budget are not in conflict, and I think that it was a difficult period, but both groups worked well together to complement the recommendations that both, you know, riders and also people with disabilities agreed on. I thought that was good. Let's see, I'd like to go around and recognize members of the committee that would like to speak.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Thank you. Well, good evening, and I appreciate you coming here, and especially when you're right across the street in Tacoma Black from me and Silver Spring. I listened to what you said, and it reminded me of I used to run a state agency in another state, and there was always the resource issue, there was always a problem.
Yes.
And it seemed like we always get little bits of money for this and little bits of money for that. But we never really got a whole little package of money to do some long-range planning. And I'm getting the sense from what you're saying that it would be beneficial for Metro to have a sufficient amount of revenue.
That working out? Thank you. A sufficient amount of revenue so that you could make a reasonable long-range plan and actually expect it to happen. And so I'm wondering, has there been any discussion at the board level of Metro as to what kind of a revenue source that might be?
There has been discussion on the board. The political situations in the three jurisdictions tend to be different from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And since it wouldn't be the board that would be doing it, it would be our political entities. For example, in Maryland, if we were going to do, say, a regional sales tax, there would need to be something authorizing legislation through the legislature. And then it would have to be probably predicting here, because there's not been anything concrete proposed yet. It would then have to probably get the buy-in from the two county councils. So the entities that would have to make the decisions would be outside the board itself. But I think what the board can do and what you all can do to some extent would be the liaisons. You know, I can go to, for example, the Montgomery County Council, which is the entity that appointed me along with the Montgomery County Executive, and say, you know, these are Metro's needs, and this is why we need this dedicated revenue source. So that's the likely process. It would be coming in from the outside, and those of us who are sort of inside the organization of Metro would be basically experts people who are working with them to make it happen.
Thank you. And to add on to Charlie's question, once something like this is established, is the board looking at multi-year budgets as a way to move forward so we don't have the kind of the same drill year after year?
We have multi-year budgets on the capital side now, although it's only binding for the first year. It's a good question, Pat. The board has talked about this before, whether we should do biennial budgets. I'll tell you my bias on this. I think multi-year budgets are an excellent planning tool in terms of having being specifically binding on more than the first year. There are entities that have biennial budgets. They pass a budget that's supposed to be good for the next 2 years. What invariably happens is they come back in a year and amend the second year of that budget. So I completely agree, as a planning document, multi-year budgets are really important, and that's why we have a multi-year capital budget. In terms of being binding on spending for more than a year, that's really hard to do. Not that it can't be done, but it's much harder to make happen.
Agreed. I'm scrambling right now in my budget at VA to account for some money that I need that I didn't account for, so I can appreciate the planning part, I think, is good.
Things happen, yes.
Yeah, but don't hold me to it because I might need that money for something else. Right, I understand. Mm-hmm. Very good. Carolyn, you're from Montgomery County. Do you have any questions for Catherine?
No.
Or no questions? Okay.
We might. Oh,
we need money, that's true. Yes. No question about that. Finley, come.
Hi.
I'm going to go around the table here and recognize.
Okay. Philippe Bonnefell, Washington, D.C. This period of severe fiscal austerity, I know it seems petty to squawk about a sandwich and a soda, but some of the people are coming straight from work and it is during the dinner hour, so I'm going to squawk. But my question is, I read an article piecemeal where Mayor Bowser was saying that Maryland and Virginia are not doing their part to fund, and they're funding another study instead of funding the system. So I wanted to know if that is correct. Are you guys voting to fund a study instead of putting money into the system?
Both Maryland and Virginia have been making jurisdictional payments, as has the district, for all of the years that I know. What you may have been referring to is that the process in Maryland to decide whether they're going to make a dedicated revenue source has been a multi-year process. There has been a discussion and there has been a study of revenue sources, which might be what she was talking about. Since the Maryland legislature only has a week left in its session and the Virginia legislature is already out, neither legislature could actually act on the dedicated revenue source until next year. Now, the District of Columbia, by contrast, the D.C. Council actually meets all year long, so they could actually enact something sooner than that. And so that might be what she was talking about.
Okay, so these people work hard.
At least more time.
And the other, I was just wondering, are they looking at advertising, in other words, but are they trying to generate more advertising revenue?
Metro has done more advertising than it used to. It's now got these full stations. I don't know if you know this, there's some stations that are just covered in advertising. There's bus wraps where the whole bus is covered in advertising. There's going to be lighted signboards in some of the stations that can, you know, rotate more than one ad, so there'll be one ad and then another ad and another ad and another ad, and in between there'll be information on the system. So I think there's been some effort to expand the kind of advertising Metro does, and certainly all that revenue is welcome. We've also talked about, you know, maybe getting like business to sponsor a station. That didn't get such, you know, in other words, instead of, it would be like, you know, Judiciary Square, McDonald's station. That didn't go over so well. And it's a question of how much money we would have made off something like that anyway. So, you know, like the Verizon Center is, you know, Verizon puts a lot of money in to have the Verizon Center have a station. So,
you know, I guess what I'm saying is we do a certain amount of that. We're always trying to think of more creative things that we could do to get more money. So, you know, thoughts and ideas are welcome.
Thank you, thank you. I'd like to recognize my vice chair, who is from Maryland, Prince George's County. Denise does so much work advocating for the district that I completely neglected her when we were talking to Maryland directly. Denise, you have the floor.
Thank you for coming, Kathy. I have several questions. We do want to advocate to fundraising some kind of way to make sure that there is dedicated funding. Has it been suggested that real estate, we use the system to go to the malls, the stores, the Verizon Center, the, you know, all the games, football, soccer, whatever, could they just pay 1% of more because we're using the system to use their facilities? Has that been suggested?
Actually, that is one of the options that has been put out there. The way it would probably work is that businesses that are within a certain distance of the metro station would pay an additional business tax that would go either directly to metro or to the jurisdictions. That has been suggested, and it is one of the things on the list. Yes.
Yeah, I think that would work. I mean, those places that are really making that money could afford that, rather than the people who are not going to the games. Why should they be taxed if they're not even going to the games? You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about,
you're talking in terms of the general sales tax.
Yes. Okay. I'm talking about the people who are benefiting from it. But we want to have a conversation when people ask us questions, but it's really hard for PG and Southern, PG and Southern Maryland, because we're double hit all the time.
Yeah.
Our bus service is cut. We don't have as much metro. We don't have the metro line. We mostly our bus in Southern Maryland, Port Washington, those areas. And so it's hard to make a conversation or to talk about it and make them understand, because they're double hit. Now we're going to have, for 1 month, the Greenbelt system totally down. College Park is going to be totaled down for 15 days, and then Greenbelt for 30 days. It's a bad taste in your mouth. It's hard to have a conversation. And my concern is that SafeTrack could work, and we'll just say it will work, but people who are being hit so hard and doubly hit, if they find a way around the system, they might just say, I don't need the system. It's going to be hard to get people to come back with these double whammies. And why is it always Maryland and Southern Maryland? And why is it always PG? It is a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know what to say to people when they call me. I get called all the time, and I'm like...
Yeah, and I think you're right that people who feel that they're not getting the service they want are going to be, you know, less open to that. I will tell you, I don't know if you know Malcolm Augustine, who is another board member who represents Prince George's County on the Metro Board. He really advocated very hard to minimize the cuts to the bus service in Prince George's. There was more proposed cuts to Prince George's bus service in the original budget than there were in the final budget. And that was largely due to Malcolm Augustine's very strong advocacy for Prince George's. So you do have people on the board who are very concerned about that. And, you know, I helped him out where I could, but I think he did a really excellent job in minimizing the pains in Prince George's County.
What other?
We are in pain.
I understand what you're saying, yes.
We're always the first to be cut and the most to be cut. And that's a conversation that needs to stop. We got to figure out, you know, stop the bleeding.
I very much sympathize with that point of view.
Thank you.
Thank you. And one thing that Denise has reiterated to me several times is that two-thirds of Metro Access customers are from Prince George's County. So when that's just another hit that county seems to be taking over on top of everything else. So,
right.
You know.
Maryland has a disproportionate, both Montgomery and Prince George, Prince George, specifically Prince George's, have a disproportionate number of Metro Access users, yes.
Right. Thank you. I'd like to recognize Darnice.
Thank you for coming. I have a few issues. I live in the District of Columbia, and the rail, I mean, I live in Ward 8. Ward 7 and 8 disproportionately seem to have to pay higher fares because people that live in D.C., they go to work daily or to a medical appointment most of the time, because NASA subsidized, they have to pay $650 for each trip. I think that's unfair, a D.C. to D.C. trip, $650. I understand that, you know, the fare, you know, it's supposed to be double the fare, but I think that's expensive. That's like $13 a day. The other thing is that everybody that works in D.C. doesn't work for the federal government. They aren't subsidized. In terms partially or very little. Union workers that work for the District of Columbia get $25 a month in transportation fees. Most people that work, travel D.C. to D.C., if they don't live where a rail station is, they have to catch the bus, the rail, the bus, like that to get to work. So I think and then with some of the bus stations being cut and all of that, that's very difficult on quite a few district residents. So we feel your plight too with PG. So, and the other thing that I wanted to say is that we've talked about a way to advocate and work as liaisons for to promote Metro awareness and ridership awareness. And we suggested several times that maybe we could incorporate or invite the schools, the communities, the neighborhoods to adopt a station. It could be a bus station, it could be a rail station, but stations that are in their community, they appeal to more vested interests. They would also have they could probably partner with the police station, neighborhood watches. You know, I think that's something. And if people have a more vested interest and they understand, then they would understand, you know, the difficulty. Because we have, you know, people from every aspect of the travel information, you know, to give to them. So I think we ought to keep that in mind, too.
That's a good idea. I've done extensive efforts around stations that are in business areas to coordinate with the businesses to have them, you know, adopt a station or, you know, help, you know, in one of the downtown stations, I can't remember which one, the Business Improvement District in downtown D.C. actually paid for some artworks for the station, that kind of thing. But what you're saying is neighborhoods themselves might be able to do that. That's an interesting idea, yeah.
Very good, thank you. Doris, Ray, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Doris Ray, and I live in Fairfax County, Virginia, although I am a native Washingtonian and have lived in all of the WMATA compact, well, live or work in all of the WMATA compact areas. And since I have family in Maryland, we moved to Maryland a lot. My concerns are, of course, with the sustainability of bus and rail, as well as metro access. And I think that it's good that you, the board, are working on that. I am very concerned that in this last round, although we had to raise, we ended up having to raise fares by your decision, that that bus service particularly was cut back, as well as the changes in operating hours of the rail system. The rail system has been a blessing since its beginning for those of us who don't drive for any reason, but particularly for people due to a disability who can't drive. And so it is concerned to me, and I'm sure, I hope that will be reevaluated, but slashing bus service is very problematic. I lived in another part of Northern Virginia for 16 years and would have stayed there but for my bus service being slashed back once every 70 to 90 minutes when it was running, and it was really not running much at all towards the end and not on the weekends. That affects, of course, metro access users here because of the alignment with days and times of service. I want to mention something, though, that came up today. I think the metro rail system must be maintained, certainly the tracks and the trains and all, and the stations. And one of the things that came up today when I was listening to Coach and Andy is that Wamata was on there to talk about lighting study, and I only heard a very short part of this at the end, but they were also talking about spending money to repaint the stations white. Yes, we need better lighting. In fact, as a person with a vision impairment, this is very important to me and others who are here at this meeting, both in the audience and at the table. And I'm surely hoping that the vision impaired community will be involved, directly involved in those decisions. But I am concerned about creating an environment, as in this room, where everything is white on white on white with white lights and no contrast. That is just the opposite of what we need, and the thought of spending our taxpayer dollars to paint the stations white, where is the money going to come from for the lighting enhancements and the lighting studies that have already been done, and various other things that have to do with accessibility that may have been mentioned here that would truly enhance the station and the access of the system. So I hope that you will look towards that, and I hope that we will look towards spending our tax dollars on systems that are accessible, and I guess I'm pointing to the alternative to metro access that is planned for the Highland in Maryland and then an expansion to others, and using providers that are not compliant with and who in fact choose to be compliant with the ADA fully. It should not happen. So those are my issues, and I thank you for
listening. Thank you.
Oh, except I did want to mention one last thing, which is I know that there's a federal member here, and my concern is that there are many people, I think I'm with the idea of a federal subsidy, and particularly because I know that there are people from Prince William and Loudoun and other close-by counties, and the same thing in Maryland with Howard and such, who are not paying into the compact system. But they're riders, thousands of them are riding every day. And in my view, my taxes in Fairfax, and the Urbana for them, and those in Maryland and D.C.
Well, actually, when the Silver Line extends out to Loudoun, Loudoun will be good.
Right, okay, but that's some time from now, and we're having to deal with the fiscal and programmatic service issues now.
Hang on, Charlie. Yeah, thank you, Doris. And I've got four more people who want to speak, and I also want to be cognizant of the supporters' time, so. Very good. Doris, I need to listen to that Coach Anami piece today. Thank you for mentioning that. I missed that. Let's see. May I recognize Tap?
I'll go back, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Brian Miller, to my right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, my name is Brian Miller. I represent Alexandria to the Access Advisory Committee. And I am the current chair of the Boston Rail Subcommittee. And I just wanted to underline, you know, what I've heard so far. And unfortunately, I came in a little bit late due to some of the fun we're all experiencing in the safe track. Since the yellow line is currently the lucky winner of the some of the current delays and the challenges that we face there. But in any case, we have a lot of the same issues, concerns out in Alexandria as a community that relies very, very heavily on Metro to get into the district for work and also for social activities and all sporting events and all of that. And it was a significant concern for us when Metro did decide to, at least for the next few years, have an earlier time for the weekend service that has a very large impact on us and our ability to get back home after work, after various social engagements, and just being able to be in the district and be part of the community. It disproportionately impacts what we still have, and we tend to be a demographic that has lower incomes and have a hard time being able to pay for ride services like Uber and Lyft, especially when they're surging because there's no more Metro. So we're watching it very, very closely and with a lot of concern. And we appreciate all the demands that you all are facing, but we just want to let you know that on the other end, on the Alexandria side, we bring have a lot of same concerns you are out of Maryland. So thank you very much for being here today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Brian. Very good. Mary Kay, you're recognized.
I don't have a comment at this time.
All right. Very good. And, Matt McKee, I think you're my last speaker.
Okay. This may be a stupid suggestion, but when Martha set up all the communication networks, haven't they, through the tunnel, whatever, for things like Wi-Fi and phone?
We're working on it. They're not in all the tunnels yet, but we're working on it, yeah.
They have had to use it for free, is that it?
No, we haven't attached a user fee. There's some payment being made to Amada from the providers. In other words, the providers, in order to give their customers access, the providers are compensating Amada for some of the cost of the installation of the system.
I'm curious, are these same situations occurring all the way up the East Coast and all the large cities, the same shortages and so forth?
In some systems, yes, and in some systems, no. We're probably hit harder than most places because, as you know, WMATA has been in operation for almost 40 years now. And there hasn't been the kind of ongoing maintenance that there should have been during that period of time. So we're playing catch up at this point, and we're having to invest an enormous amount of money into getting the system up to where it should have been kept up to during that time. I think that, I believe that that situation is related in part to the lack of a dedicated funding source. If you have to go to the jurisdictions and to riders every year and say, we need more money, you just don't get the kind of money you do than if you have a dedicated revenue source. And so Metro has sort of scrimped and saved and not done the maintenance it should do. And so we're probably in worse shape than most of the East Coast and other places in the country transit systems. But many of them are also seeing overall declines in ridership, you know, sort of long-term declines in ridership. We're seeing worse than most of them, but some of the other ones are seeing it too. And there's some thinking that part of it is due to the fact that the way people use transit is changing. The way people work is changing. More people telework. I have three adult nieces, and none of them works in an office 9 to 5. They all have full-time jobs, but one works from home. One is an international development expert. She's all over the world, except when she's working at home. And one of them works mainly at home, but travels to see clients. And I think the millennial generation is approaching work differently than some of us. I'm a boomer age person. Some of us who are older, you know, we thought of, you know, you go to the office and you work in the office. And a lot of the younger people, that's not the way they do things, which means that the role of transit in the future may be different than what it is now. In one respect, that's good for us because it means that we don't have to worry about this huge peak of the peak rush during rush hour, and we can maybe utilize some of the capacity we have off rush hour. But on the other hand, it also means that if we're not getting the ridership, we're not going to get the revenues. So we're still sort of trying to figure all of that out.
Thank you.
Sorry, putting myself off here. Let's see, I have Randy Pope, who has not had a chance to speak. Randy, you're up next.
Hi, hello everyone, this is Randy Pope, and I've been listening to everybody's comments. And for sure there's some issues with rail services, particularly for deafblind individuals. So, for example, I have to count and memorize how many stops I need to be on before I get out. I can't rely on the auditory announcements or the visual displays outside the window or anything like that. And it's an ongoing problem in terms of visual displays for people with low vision, where to get off. And I have enough vision that I can see that people are on one stand on the platform, that people are looking around and they're constantly looking up. And I've asked why it is sometimes that people are constantly looking up, and I noticed that everybody's head kind of shift, and then I found out about the auditory announcements that are being made. So people are getting their information that way, which obviously, if you're deaf, you don't get that. You don't get information that way. So I think the whole piece about communication as a rider for a deafblind individual is big, and there's a lot of issues that come up because of that throughout the system. So there was I was testing with the Metro Access Service just last year, and just recently, excuse me. And there are people who have said that they've noticed some improvement with communication for Metro Access, but if somebody only is going to write with a regular pen on a piece of paper and think that that's going to work for somebody who has low vision, it's just going to be frustrating. There needs to be some kind of form where the drivers have the thicker darker, bolder pens that they can write with. So there's just a variety of issues. The language use is one of them. And another concern, particularly for deafblind people, is finding a place, finding the right place to stand, to know where to wait. And deafblind people have told me that the stations, I know we talked about this, they're just too dark. They just really are too dark. I think those are some of the biggest challenges that we face as deafblind people.
Thank you, Randy.
I can manage some of them to get around, but like for example, coming to the meeting here, I get here by train. So anyway, thank you.
Can I ask a follow up on that? The visual displays in the 7000 series rail cars, are they easier for you to see? The new ones? They're not? Okay. Because I think they were designed to be, there's the ones that are up high.
For me, the new trains are much better, yes. Maybe not for everyone, but for me, they are better.
Okay. So it seems like it would depend. They're better for some people, but not for everyone.
And I'm just shaking my head because I'm also deafblind. But the reason I have no is merely is because of distance. And the thing with the PEDs, the passenger information displays from the very, very beginning, they're too high and they're also not all.
Okay, so the ones that are higher up are not as good.
That's not good.
I just wanted to add right quick. I've had young people with 20/20 vision complain that they can't see the signs when they're pulling into the stations because it's too dark. Not even on the wall that's right inside the window where they're sitting in. It's okay, it's not
all right. I know those are hard to see. I was thinking more of the signs inside the cars and the new cars where they will tell you also what station you're coming into. One of the reasons for putting this inside the cars was because exactly the problem you mentioned, it's very hard to see what's outside the window.
Okay. Thank you very much. Kathy, I'd like to thank you for the time you spent with us. You've taken all the questions, you've taken a lot of time giving us right answers. You understand, I think, more fully now some of the issues and problems that we face. I think as far as some of the things Randy talked about, making sure that some of the apps that we get into some of the smartphones, if they can be designed so that a person who is deafblind can get access to that information, that helps. So we have a lot of expertise, as you probably know, on this committee.
Yes. Yes.
And we are very happy to share that expertise with you. And if you've got issues that you would need our assistance with, Mr. Kent and the members of the staff here, are happy to give us the challenge of providing access into those situations, which we'll be happy to give you. My last thing that I would like to say is that we have very excellent cooperation with Mr. Kent and the staff underneath him. They do a great job of supporting this committee. We have very lively discussions from time to time. We don't always agree, but I think we come out and try to give you and the board and management the best advice that we can give. Not only just these are the issues, but these are the ways that we want to try to solve these problems. And we appreciate being brought into the discussions as early as you possibly can, and thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you very much, and I do very much appreciate the expertise of this committee, and I'm glad you feel free to bring the issues to the board.
Thank you. Charlie?
Yes, I just want to say very quickly, we thank you for your service on the AFA, and as Doris and I are from the AFA as well, so thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Very good. You're welcome to stay. We have a little bit more of the meeting, but we appreciate your time, Kathy. Thank you. Thank you. a discussion of the Silver Line. That was two projects James Vancey would like to come before our group and give us an overview of what's going on with the Silver Line. We would appreciate it.
Summer of 2007, so I'm coming up on my 10th anniversary, Neil Wishman. And I'm a lifelong resident of the region, having grown up outside of Falls Church, living in Alexandria now since the mid-80s. Excuse me, went working on to this project. So I do want the opportunity, I know we had a chance to, there was a presentation 2 years ago when phase one of the Silver Line opened up, and of course, talking about, you know, the rail project is a new segment, obviously, of the Silver Line. And the actual line itself has been designated for shared space with the Orange Line and the Blue Line to the city in Albuquerque and Largo. What is the Silver Line? And let's take a moment, and I will be taking it. It's a seamless integration with the entire 106-mile system. And it's a 23-mile extension, so it's the largest single extension of the metro system to service a new area. 11 stations, new stations for the whole Silver Line extension. 5 in phase 1, which I'll go over shortly about what that is. 6 in phase 2. Phase 1 runs from the roughly the East Falls Church Metro Station to the new, the Wheelie, well, now 2.5 years in operation, the Wheelie Reston East Station in Reston. That's now the east side of Reston, as the name implies. And it opened in July of 2014, so we're coming up on the third anniversary of the phase one as well this coming this summer. Phase two runs from the Wheelie station out the corridor, through the rest of Reston, Herndon, Dulles Airport, and into two stations in Loudoun County. We talked about Loudoun County coming on board here. I will talk about construction is projected to be completed roughly in the summer of 19, or summer or fall, that's some discussions going on. At this moment in time, we're probably projecting early 2020 for an opening of it, but that is obviously a decision for Ms. Porter and the other members of the board as we get to substantial completion and go through systems operation. This is a project of many partners. And I want to point this out as a success story and the complexity of getting a new major construction project going. So this is truly a partnership of federal, state, Virginia state agencies, local agencies, as well as the regional agencies. So that's federal transit, federal aviation, are significant partners, Virginia transportation, which is, of course, the highway department, rail and public transportation, which is the transit department within Virginia, WMATA, MWA itself, Fairfax County, the town of Herndon, and Loudoun County is just joining. So this is quite the combination in which I want to emphasize as far as how we've had this partnership continuing to move through. MWA has got the job as the major partner that we took over 10 years ago of physically building it, but of course this is being built as a metro system and funded by all those parties and funding structures. Something very important to this committee that I want to emphasize as I start the presentation is accessibility of the stations themselves. I've illustrated in this slide predominantly the Wheelie station. Again, the majority of these stations are located in the center of the Dulles Highway, the Dulles Toll Road, and Access Road, east of the airport, what's called the Dulles Greenway, into Loudoun County. These stations will look significantly or substantially like the Wheelie station, and they will be assessed through pedestrian bridges and these what we call entry pavilion buildings, each of these look like. There's a redundancy of access of both elevators, escalators, stairs, They're trying to provide cover all the way through. There's some different design features of that. All the stations of the bathrooms are included in all the new stations that are accessible to the public at the mezzanine level. The bike systems have been provided coordination significantly with the local governments, Fairfax and Loudoun counties, the town of Herndon, and a lot of the developers who are providing both bike access immediately at the station, and a lot of the new developments that are occurring right in the community proximity. And importantly, that these stations are fully in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Just to give you a quick synopsis, again, I'm just showing you these maps, showing you where phase one was from East Baltimore Church, we've already explained, through Tysons, the area, the McLean Station, is the first station in Tysons. Tysons Corner is right there between the two shopping centers, Tysons Corner Center and the Tysons Galleria on Route 123. The Greensboro Station is on the first station on Route 7 in Virginia. That's predominantly, at this moment in time, surrounded by office buildings and shopping centers, but the development is occurring very quickly and is farther and is changing dramatically, both including new residences as well as other retail. And the final station in Tysons is the Spring Hill, which again is characterized at this moment, has been characterized as car dealerships, but you can see the new buildings are popping up as we, over the last 2.5 years, both apartment buildings and as well as, and there's a lot of development that's presently planned. The Wheelie Station was when we built this, there was a park and ride lot there. The county of Fairfax, working with the Comstock developers, is in the process of building a transit-oriented development there that's a combination of offices, residences, and retail. And that's just the first step of what they're doing. That's on the north side of the highway. Others are planned. And that's all in operation and this the activity is going. But as I point out, July was 2014 was a busy day for us. For those who did go to the opening of the Silver Line, it just as a reminder of the access and I think that we had obviously the highest use for the Silver Line at this point has been Tysons Corner Center and the Wheelie Station, so Wheelie acting as the end line at this point in time. But let's go on to what's happening with Phase 2. Phase 2, as I said, will first service Reston Town Center, Herndon, which is both the town of Herndon on the north side and the west end of Reston on the south side. The what's called the Innovation Center area is just before you reach Dulles Airport. Many of you may know the sort of the upside down trunk pyramid. That's the center for innovative technology. That's going to be the center, but there's a lot of development activity out there. Dulles Airport itself, this is a crucial part of connecting Dulles Airport to the region more clearly. And then the two stations in Loudoun County, which is called Loudoun Gateway, which is on the north end, and Ashburn, which is about halfway between Dulles Airport and Leesburg. The next slide just gives you a synopsis of the facilities at each and every of the five stations that are predominantly accessible, more easily accessible. I'll talk about the Dulles Airport station here in a moment. It primarily is there, of course, to serve the airport. Don't need to go through all of those, but it's a good synopsis. Reston Town Center. Kids arrives on both sides, a lot of involved access. There's no new parking being provided, no new garages being built at Reston Town Center. In Reston, the garages are at the east end and the west end of the community of Reston. Herndon, the parking garages are being doubled. That's the west end of the area. More 1,950 spaces are being added. Again, bike racks, five blockers, and the county is responsible for building this garage, and they are like Wheelie, they are including a bike rack area, and as well as it's the bus terminal for servicing people in this area. Innovation Center, this is sort of a new area for development. There is a garage being built by the county there, as well as on the south side, and each of the both south side and the north side has a number of facilities. Loudoun Gateway Station is Loudoun Gateway and Ashburn are being built by the county, the two of the garages are, and there's one privately built garage at Ashford as well, and that's all going to be servicing. So this is a reach out into the western areas to assess this. Next, I'm just going to go through a couple of these slides to show you the activities that are happening there. Reston Town Center, before Metro got going, had already taken off and built its own character, being a very unique community within Reston and trying to truly be the town center of a local planning community there. There, Boston Properties is the key development. That picture that I'm showing to you is the Reston Town Center side as it predominantly is now. The properties on the bottom right corner are where is where the Metro station is going to be accessed, and the county is working very closely with the development community to build that area up to basically bring Reston Town Center down to the station. That's what they're doing now. Similar activities are happening on the south side. The town of Herndon itself, being the more historic or longer term community, being a railroad town that dated back to the mid 1800s, they are looking, they're both looking at how they concentrate on their downtown, but the town has also made significant planning and zoning amendments to the area around the station to provide for residences and offices to be built in that area. Innovation, as I've spoken to you before, is on both the north side and the south side of the, which is characterized by the Center for Innovative Technology. The south side, which is called Innovation Center South, is a joint venture with Fairfax County to build the garage and bring the new development into it. And on the north side, two Loudoun County developments, one's called The Hub, and the other one's called Waterside, and the county has, that those roads are being reconfigured as we speak, basically to bring the opportunity to bring both businesses and the residences in closer connection to the stations right now. Pretty much open land for a significant portion of that area. Excuse me. I should have brought my water over here. There you go. The Nellis Station. This is, as I pointed out, is a crucial part. Thank you, Neil. Got my back here, thanks. This is a good opportunity that we did connect Dulles Airport to the region by the Metro. Reagan National Airport, of course, does have Metro access to it, but it's crucial that we're always wanting to get Dulles, having to offer a better opportunity for the flying public, but also, it's a significant employer which has people from the entire region coming to that, accessing it right now to get to that area. This cutaway picture I'm showing you, the station is across from the terminal in front of the parking garage. And it's an elevated station in that area, so it'll be actually hiding the parking garage from when you're at the terminal looking back at it. Very much an architecture that is imitating that of the state of the airport itself. A lot of Metro architecture style to it as well. The trains will be on the top, but you come down to the mezzanine level, which will connect with the existing pedestrian walkway that connects the garage to the terminals. And those are airport pedestrian walkways with movable sidewalks, as well as the elevators, escalators, all to feed the rider and the employees into the area, the terminal itself. Loudoun Gateway is the first station in Loudoun County. The county's building a parking garage. There's a lot of opportunity in this area, but very much more of a slate of the county was predominantly interested in. It's going to be very much a commuter lot at this point in time, serving a lot of existing eastern Loudoun County to get to there. There are some questions which we noted up there, both as far as future land uses, obviously, even reading the paper, they talk about Redskins out there versus, being here in the town or staying in Prince George's, and we'll see. That's an open question. That's being built by the county. And finalizing with Ashburn, which is a big venture into Loudoun County. You have two major developments. The north side is being built by the Comstock development, who also built the Wheely development, and as well as what's called Grand Prairie District. You've heard some discussion ability. The Microsoft is coming into backing them up in some ways. And the Moorfield development is on the south side, which is the development predominantly by the Clever Charitable Foundation, all having opportunity to find public out there to actually get more transit accessibility. Just got a couple of slides here showing you, this construction is fascinating. If you get out there today, the stations all look like stations right down the middle of the highway. They're big, they're at different degrees. Innovation and Dulles are significantly built. They look from the outside structure. The Herndon station is quickly coming up, and the two entities, both the Reston Town Center and the Loudoun stations, are beginning to frame this way. This year is a heavy construction year, and 2018 and 19 is a significant portion of a lot of the systems, the wires, the track, and everything else that goes into those stations. There's a lot of work to be done still. But I said we are on a point now for completion, hopefully in the summer of 19, or maybe the autumn of 19, we'll see how it goes, which, as I mentioned earlier, the revenue service could be in early 2020. How we can go from there. So, and one final point, just as a significant feature for the metro system, is we are building a new rail yard out of Dulles Airport. It's not going to be, obviously, it's to handle the fleet, both the expansion of the Silver Line, but also just the entire fleet itself with both the inspections, the service buildings, the warehouses, the maintenance, and it will be, I guess, the largest facility in the metro system. Presently on airport land, that's going to be granted by a super long easement to WMATA. It's going to be their facility, where it is our contractor, Pencil Phelps, is building that one. We do have two different contractors building this complex. But that's part and parcel of the construction of the Silver Line. So, there are probably a lot of questions. I'm happy to entertain any.
I think there probably will be. Yeah. I would like to say that I'm not happy to see my Virginia Redskins. But we got a lot of them.
I'm not commenting on that.
That's probably not germane to the discussion.
Metro accessibility is a crucial part of
it. But at least I'll be able to get there.
I haven't gone since the RFK days.
Yeah, when they have a winning season, I'll be happy. There you go. Who would like to ask?
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Brian. I live out in Alexandria. And two questions for you, if I may, and I'll try to keep it very, very brief. The first is regarding the Dulles station. I'm already out of time.
That was great. Very good, Brian.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
I got a little strict around here, so anyway, in any case, one of the challenges in transportation is always that last, mile, for sure, and often the last quarter mile. And can you give me just a little bit more detail with respect to the Dulles station and the ability of people to get from that station into the terminal? You mentioned there was the pedestrian pathway.
The slide back up.
Right. Go ahead.
The cutaway slide, which she's going to be bringing back up, again, the station, you're going to be pulling up to the mezzanine, very much like the Wheelie station right now, that you're going to be on a different level, which is accessible by elevators, escalators,
sure,
and stairs. Then you'll be able to go from the trains down to the ticketing area and the mezzanine area to access both going to the parking garage as well as catching the access services to the station itself. Now, that's the key for most mobile people be able to access that. But as I said, airports, lots of distance, both between just the physical structure itself to have to get from one point to another, security and others makes things longer. But that does presently have the moving sidewalk. That part's being reconstructed as we speak. And it will then, when you get into the airport itself, the airport is fully accessible. We also, several years ago, Dulles went through a major multi-billion-dollar expansion with the Aerotram, so that the trains now actually take you from the terminal, the historic terminal, out to the midfield, you know, actual access to the gates for the planes themselves. One thing I want to add to that, though, is in addition to that, WMATA, the airport's authority, we operate bus, you know, shuttle bus services around the airport for both employees, but also for riders, and you know, for just the coming from the far outs, the parking lots, but also the parking garages. On the right side of that picture, between the garage, the station and the garage, is actually a driveway, and the buses will continue to be running. Those buses will be running in the future. So for it's another option for a person not to have to go down and then be on the asphalt, you know, the walking sidewalk, or be, you know,
just for a matter of time, just want to interrupt you real quick. And so those moving sidewalks, do they take you? Yeah, I'm not sure if there's like, you know, breaks, maybe I have a quarter mile long, you know, moving sidewalk, but from that station into the terminal, or but what I'm getting at is that do I gotta like go as a blind person, one of my biggest pet peeves is being dumped somewhere in a big parking garage. Mm-hmm. I gotta navigate my way through a parking garage to figure out where the heck to get out the other side.
You
go find some, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you go from the station or the parking garage to a junction, a big yoke that's right, you know, that's just right in front of it, that turns into a Y that feeds to both the east and west sides of the airport. So depending on which airline you're going to, and they all are marked, you know, for access to them. That's near and dear to the airport, both having to have, you know, people have knowledge of that.
Yeah.
And then there's a banks of elevators and escalators to take you up to the terminal itself.
Okay, and then we'll want to talk about slamming or something. I want to
come down
to that. That's
a different experience. From
yes, sure. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
are
you next?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Before the Silver Line came, I used to take metro from East Wiltshire to West Wiltshire, not Loring, Louisiana, because it was 10 to 15 miles from my place. And I had to drive my van that I had, a control van with the ramp van. And I was so delighted that I had four stations right close to my house almost now. McLean, Harrison, Greensboro, and Spingham, within 2 miles. But guess what? The parking spaces are completely screwed up in that area. I parked my car, and I had a ticket because I parked by mistake, kiss and ride in Spring Hill Station. And finally, I was looking around, and there's hardly any public parking spaces there. And a car dealer came to me and said, "You looking for a parking place?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You could park in our parking space as long as you want to buy one of our cars."
I said, "I think I know that dealer.
I'm not interested in that." He said, "You have free parking here if you just spend 1 hour to listen to us." I said, "No, I'm not interested in parking." So would there be any future especially in Greensboro and Spring Hill and Tyson's Bay also?
Yeah. Greensboro, that's been a very hotly contested discussion, you know, during phase one, and so I still hear from myself. It was a Fairfax County decision. The Greensboro station is not envisioned as having parking garages other than what would be the commercial garages that are being built now by the developers. And they're predominantly planning that around their own customer needs for each individual building and not a consumer park. And the same is true with Spring Hill. There is some limited access there, but it's mostly being incorporated. There's a lot of work to keep that, you know, that kiss and ride lot in place. We moved it around a few times, made deals with various property owners. And the Kiss and Ride lot is actually owned by Fairfax County. The entry building itself is a metro facility. The county is, future developments, looking to try and improve that when the developers come in. That one's been stymied. It was supposed to be the first one out of the gate, but it turned out has not gone forward. What's happened is the county worked with, over at the McLean station, the county did work with the developers, which is the City Line company right now, where the people may remember the old MITRE building. That was the single-story, you know, the first round of office buildings built in the 60s and 70s. I'm high school in that area. and they've been torn down, and there are roughly 700 parking spaces over there. I don't see them filled up a lot, but the county did work to provide some additional parking, and the county is constantly trying to upgrade the connector service to improve the connections within Tyson's. I'll let the bus people speak more to that, but they are putting that burden on there. So it's heavy on the McLean side, and they're waiting for a lot of the development and trying to work it down. But they intentionally made a decision for you, for Fairfax residents, that they intentionally decided not to put parking garages on Route 7 in that location.
I have a couple more questions from Mr. Vancey since we need to move to public comment period. Other questions?
Doris. Yes, thank you. I'm Doris Ray, and I live in Fairfax County and work throughout Northern Virginia, the independents are in Northern Virginia. I can't wait. You've already made my life much easier getting to Reston, and since we serve Loudoun County as well, it will be wonderful for our consumers and for a lot of people. I wondered about I'm assuming that Loudoun County will enhance the bus service, and I'm making an assumption, but maybe we don't know yet, about the bus or buses that will go further into Loudoun County, whether they will be moved eventually to the end station at Ashford.
I can say is working closely with the Loudoun County staff. Yes, Loudoun County Transit is going through a transformation from being predominantly a long haul service. The regional buses in Leesburg or Ashburn or Western Loudoun, and come in here to the West Falls Church and then actually all the way to Washington. They are upgrading their bus services to be through your more traditional route with buses and 70 passengers. We're trying to expand that. As I said, I think this is the first time you're getting a new jurisdiction into it, and Loudoun has started embracing the transit world in this past few years. I can say that because I started my career there, and I know very well. And so I think that they are working on it, but they have not finalized plans yet. They're still working. I can't say that they're going to be moving everything to the inline station. People who have vested interest in the routes, if you have interest in certain things too. And many of the Eastern Loudoun communities, Sterling Park, Countryside, and others like that, have to be served as well. And the counties are trying to either feed that service to the Loudoun Gateway Station or to the Innovation Center Station.
Thank you. Donnie?
Oh, I had one other question.
Quickly, 20 seconds.
The stations are very accessible that are on phase one, but one of the things that I've noticed about them is that it is very hard to do wayfinding in those stations. Very little in terms of the usage of the floor in the way it is there. That's very different from other stations and markings. It just doesn't have the same kind of contrast, and it's enhanced by something that I never realized when the design was put in, the natural lighting on days when it is very sunny. You are just blinded from being able to find your way through those stations, particularly if you have light sensitive vision impairment. So I'm very, very concerned about that for the rest of the stations, because the stations are entered by the pedestrian bridges and they cross each other and things like that. I'm also concerned about the fact that there aren't the plexiglass on the sides of the
Doris,
pedestrian way,
we need to move on.
Make it a wind tunnel and terribly cold in the winter.
I've heard enough. heard that before. Signage is always an issue that's under review, and I know WMATA, even after it's opened up, has been revisiting it, as well as the county dealing with the bus access and the rest. And we're always trying to, you know, wanting to get as we build out phase two, you know, trying to get that feedback on it. Wanting it's going to be something that's going to be monitored and have to be modified in the future. We'll have to put some modifications.
Donis, you have the last word.
Okay. My statement is very brief. Basically, I want to know if it will be ADA compliant for people that use their mobility challenge. Because the airports, people are always rushing around, and people that use scooters, chairs, canes, walkers, and also have luggage and all of that. How would that work with them getting around on the sidewalk? The moving sidewalks, the elevators, and escalators.
My back up here is funny. The Delta State has four elevators. We're trying to very much make that, you know, that the station, you're getting that movement between the, you know, the trains down to, you know, to the air. But again, you have the option of getting back to the buses as well. And yes, the pedestrian tunnel, I don't know, not to that part actually. Unless you're in the parking garage, they know few people have taken it. It's a very wide tunnel that has both the moving sidewalks as well as the regular walking area. And I think that it gives the opportunity for those who are moving more quickly down, I think, you know, the market, that for those who are mobile, you know, have mobility issues, maybe, you know, can, you know, stay a little closer or take the moving sidewalks.
Yeah. One brief thing. In the parking garage, what's the ratio of parking spaces for people that are mobility challenged? They may bring their car in parking and have to move to their scooter or whatever.
I can't answer that, but I'd be happy to, you know, I can follow up that and get that information and just pass it back.
Thank you, sir. We would like to invite you back. Thank you very much for this presentation. Very nicely done. We'd like to invite you back for progress reports, periodic progress reports, when you feel it, that would be useful for us and useful for you to get feedback.
Sure.
I appreciate it. And I have one last question for Mr. Kent. Are you still there, Mr. Richardson?
Of course.
The question for you is, since we're going out all the way to Dulles and we have a fixed route system, does that extend metro access all the way out to Dulles?
It does extend metro access to within 3/4 of a mile of each rail station that is in Loudoun. But Loudoun County has kind of on and off talked with us about how they would like that to be handled, messaging, you know, and education for the public, because the county has its own paratransit service within their borders, so it needs to be very important for us to be able to explain to customers, and depending on how they want to use the services, you know, how they would interact with each other.
Good, something for us to look forward to in 2019. All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's amazing. Thank you very much. Very good. So we will keep that in mind, and we will try to tap, and we will see where we go, and see what also happens with metro access up there. I have 9 customers for public comment period, so I probably will not get to metro access at the bus rail report, and I apologize for that.
Outrageous.
What was that?
He said outrageous.
Okay, first.
Mr. Chair, this is B. So I'll be calling the names and then we'll just get around to the mic. I would share that just because of the time here, Mr. Chair, we're going to 2 minutes per person.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, the first person is Barbara Millville.
Hi, I'm President of the National Capital Citizens with Low Vision, and I'd like to bring up the painting topic that Doris had brought up earlier. And if lighting is the reason for the painting in the rail stations, you know, we would like to have you guys strongly consider fixing the lighting as the first priority. As you know, NCCLB did a lighting study, and the root causes for the lighting issue is 40-year-old lighting fixtures, and the second root cause is the maintenance that is replacing the light bulbs that are burned out. So NCCLV cares very, very much about improved lighting in rail stations, and we are wondering why there was no public discussion about the painting. And we, as always, we would like to assist in resolving the lighting issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
And just to answer your question, it is being treated as a pilot and a maintenance issue, so that's why there was no public comment. But I think the feedback we received tonight, I can certainly take it back and we can discuss more.
But you can't undo the painting, can we?
Well, the painting so far is only on, that I'm aware of, is only on one side of Union Station. But we'll talk more about it. We have some more public comment.
I think we have a bus rail topic coming up here.
The next public comment will be Heidi Cage.
It's nice to be back with you. I'll talk fast. So my own health concerns and my staff position working with an organization of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities has had lots of my own contact with the ongoing problems with Metro access. My own trip last week, I clearly called, let the known person going with me. We were both wheelchairs, both in the morning when they came. They were not prepared for that. That was solved quickly by the afternoon. They tried to pick up three of us in wheelchairs from the same event. Because even though they knew that, and it was not corrected for the afternoon trip, we had to wait an extra hour. The director of the state Office of Disability Administration for DC stayed an extra hour plus with us because she didn't want to leave us. Second, another, in that letter to the board, it talks about the 14% who were doing 78% of the trips. That's the people I work with. DDS actually pays through their Medicaid waiver MTM to put money on Metro Access for all their trips. So it really is that group of people. And we were at the city council. Now, I want to say that Allison always immediately jumps on and does everything she can. What I see is that your resources are stretched so tight, it limits on what she's able to do. Someone else I was with, pick up 3 to 3:30, and it was 5 o'clock. Because her drivers got lost at the earlier, and what I understood is there were no other vans to shift it to. So it's just clear, and our community is really noticing the effects of what's happened.
Thank you.
The next person is Cara Jones.
Mr. Chair, if we could, I'd like to make a comment on the Metro Access service issues at the end. That'd be all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, you are, Mr. President. Joan Christopher,
Hi, I'm Kara's mother. We live in Silver Spring, and I want to tell you some problems that we've been having in March. The dispatching service. The first problem, she had an arrival time at her destination of 11:45 and got there at 12:15 because the dispatcher told the driver to double back into Silver Spring for another passenger, which threw her off and made her late for a meeting, and she was left in the lobby because they take everyone upstairs in a group, very upset. The second time was even more serious. She was talking about it. Again, we were in Silver Spring going to Southwest to Department of Developmental Disabilities for a DD awareness event. And the dispatcher told the driver to come back to Silver Spring. They were already in DC and pick up another passenger. When he picked up the passenger, he found that Kara's name was no longer on the log. So his GPS wouldn't work. He didn't know how to get to Southwest. Fortunately, Kara's her helper had an address. I always give her the reservation and the address. So she was able to talk him through it. Now the problem is that after an hour, I started calling and I couldn't get through to a dispatcher, and I checked her ride, and it said she had no rides for that day. She was due at DDS at 3:15. I was there to meet her. She got to DDS at 5:15. I was about to pull Mayor Bowser's jacket and say, my daughter is missing. And I don't mean to be a mama bear or anything, but that was outrageous. And particularly since she wasn't on the manifest, she wasn't on the log. So my time is up, but I think you need to look into why someone's name would disappear from the log who was supposed to be on a trip. Thank you.
Thank you. We will follow up on that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we'll have someone get further details.
Thank you.
Next person is Angela Miller.
I have been with Metro Access for almost since they first started, when I was in my first nursing home. And I know a lot of things they've had to deal with, understand. But what's really confusing to me is the new Smart Trip card. When I understand you still have the ID, but what's also confused is some of the bus drivers won't take it. They tell you don't slide it. So then one bus driver said you and the aide have to do it. Then the other driver said you don't have to do it, just the aide does. So I'm just trying to get everything clear so I know what to do and what not to do.
So real quick, I can tell you, and we'll talk more afterwards, but anybody who has a Smart Trip card, you use it independently, and that's really the purpose of it. So your interaction with the bus driver, even a station manager, can be as limited as you want it to be. When you get on the vehicle, you would tap the fare machine the same way I would. So you wouldn't even have to talk to the bus driver if you don't want to. But we can talk more about your specific experiences after this.
What bus
driver? Oh. Well, we'll talk. We'll get to more late bus driver and other things, but we'll finish up the public comment real quick.
Terry Robinson.
Terry?
Ms. Robinson.
Hi, I am, this is my first time at the meeting. I am a Metro Access driver as well as my niece, and we have had experiences that have driven us to come here because we have been unable to get answers. One issue is a cut in the process and procedures for complaints and claims. There was an incident that we had in October of 2016, in which we were riding together in my niece's wheelchair, was not secured properly. And on the way to our destination, a couple of times she requested that the driver secure her wheelchair. He did something, but it was not secure, as what happened during one of the turns is her wheelchair went up on one wheel. So she's holding on in her wheelchair. Her wheelchair was damaged, and we ended up not being able to use it. Luckily, we were going over to Washington Hospital Center, where there are plenty, and we were able to transfer her. There was a lot of stuff that went on. I'm not going to bore you with those details, but trying to get a response to that since October to this day, we have not. We have had several phone calls. We have been transferred to different people. We have been told or ensured that someone would get back to us. None of that has happened. Fast forward, it's just been very frustrating. It's as though our request goes into a black hole and no one is held accountable for getting back to us or addressing the issue. Instead, we just get passed around. This has happened twice. First in October and then in March. And we are continuing to try to get answers. We've been given the name of supervisors and told that they would respond to us. No one has gotten back to us. It's very frustrating as a writer when you're looking for the solution from a company and they're not responding to you. Where do we go?
A little Jersey
practice. We have Mr. Blake?
Yes.
We'll take care of that one, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
The next person is Olivia Witten.
Good evening, everyone. I live in Prince George's County in Upper Marlboro. My question is, how there aren't any buses that allow me to take Metro Access from my home because of the 3/4 of a mile rule. How do I get or advocate for more bus routes in my area to make it accessible for me to be picked up from my home versus going to a family member's house, you know, to stay overnight for, you know, a whole week where I have, you know, appointments 3-4 times. I just would like to find out how I can do that.
Another person.
Okay, welcome. Emily Jane?
Yes. My father, 85 years old, paralyzed, is a client of Metro Access. And on February the 4th, we went, you know, before that, I got tickets for the Kennedy Center performance because my dad loved symphony. So I plan to take him to see Tchaikovsky and Beethoven's, you know, symphony. So at his age, 85 years old and paralyzed, that might be his last chance because now he just had another stroke. So, you know, we just wanted to, you know, plan this big event and everything carefully. But the Metro Access driver caused us to miss the performance. We ended up watching the symphony in the lobby because we were not allowed to get to the concert hall until intermission. So, So, my dad and I watched symphony on TV in the Kennedy Center's hallway. So the tickets were really expensive, and I don't know what to say. I understand there was a 30-minute window, and the driver came towards the end of the window, but we still had should have plenty of time to make it. But if anything could go wrong, it all went wrong. So at first, the driver tried to do parallel parking in a tiny neighborhood.
And so he did this three times. He didn't know how to do parallel parking. And the second time I, you know, helped him, he made it. But then it turned out it was right blocked by the fire hydrant. So he tried it the third time. He wasted a lot of time doing parallel parking. And after that, he got my dad onto the bus, but he couldn't secure his wheelchair because the equipment was broken. You know, the socket the thing couldn't plug in. And then I had to call Metro Access. I said that the tickets are so expensive. And so could you advise, because his equipment doesn't work, and then you will cause us to miss the show. And as I was talking to Metro Access, the guy found the new equipment, and it actually worked, right? And then after that, we got moving. Actually, the driver said, no, we cannot get moving. He said, I need to pick up another passenger. Yeah, and he didn't.
We need to move.
Yeah, he dropped us not at the Kennedy Center on this road because his GPS didn't work. And I told him where to go to Kennedy Center. He didn't listen.
Okay, so
that's responsible.
Hang on.
And I want reimbursement for the tickets. Very expensive.
Okay, so we've taken. Let's see, we done with Metro with public comment.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we've taken about 9 or 10 individuals. We are going to respond to each one of these. I know that we ran through them fast. I don't want the individuals who spoke to think that we are not going to respond to their issues. So, B, you are recognized next.
Yeah,
and then
Mr. Chairman, real quick.
Mr. Blake, yes.
Mr. Kent.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Kent, thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, I was going to try to address a few of the items that came up, but I did want to ask you, given that you have the subcommittee reports, did you want us to wait until that?
No, the subcommittee report's going to be waived.
All right, okay, all right. Well, let me go through the points, because, you know, obviously I've taken notes on all of them. You know, everything from, Barbara Millville's first comment about the lighting and the painting, I can share with you that the lighting work is still incorporated into the renovation projects and the rail system. I was not aware of the painting pilot in this particular location, but one thing I do want to remind the committee is that what we asked you and certainly Ms. Millville to do was to tell us where the problems were the most acute, and you did that. I don't think, though, that there's any limitation on our engineers to try and experiment with different ways to improve the visibility in different areas. And they're trying to do that because the conditions in the different stations are different. I think Pat is correct that Mr. Miller is the guy who can say, I'd like another update, please, at the bus rail subcommittee, and we'd be happy to bring the staff back and let you ask the tough questions. So I do agree with that. I think that would be the right way to handle it. And Brian, you know, I'm happy to support you in making sure that the right people come to the meeting so you can get some detail on this.
Thank you.
For yourself, your committee, and Barbara, whose organization has done so much to help us with the lighting issues. Heidi's comment about more issues with the service. Yes, we're aware that there have been more problems recently with Metro Access on on-time performance, certain lateness to appointments, missed appointments, things of this nature. I want to reassure the committee that one thing that has been good about WMATA over the years is that these problems are not occurring because the money in the budget is not going to Metro Access. The funds are continuing to be provided by our board. The issue that we've had over recent months, I have to say, not even weeks, but months, has been an issue of manpower. I'm very happy to report to the committee this evening that we have had some very favorable meetings and discussions with all of our contractors and have been helping them to be in a better position to recruit new Metro Access operators at better wages. I know that's something that's been advocated. I would say that again for Ms. Rush.
I see Ms. Rush clapping, so that means she's happy. And, you know, that was something that we supported. And I want to share with you that, you know, the companies pointed out to us the competition for drivers is really high. You know, for the stories that we heard this evening about Metro Access operators who were lost or who, unfortunately, with Ms. Jane and her father, you know, we don't want to have situations like that happen. We invest a lot of our money in training so the drivers know what to do. But the truth of the matter is that with Metro Access, just like with any other service, as best we try, sometimes the operators do make mistakes. The issue for us, though, is we want to help our contractors hire the best employees that they can find, because it's a difficult job, and it's a job that requires not only, you know, the skill at being able to drive the van, and I'll say to Emily, parallel park, and thank you for helping that operator. I've never heard of a customer helping one of our drivers to parallel park. So, you know, that's something that we don't want to have you do. No, I understand that, but even that, you know, the fact that you were doing that is above and beyond the call, because we don't ask our customers to do things like that for us. That's our job. But, you know, also to have the compassion and take the time to do a proper wheelchair securement. You know, I do want to tell Ms. Robinson that, you know, there's such a thing in Metro Access as a cardinal rule, which means that if you break it, you have to go. And as an employee, you know, a contractor, if a customer has an injury or if the chair tips that way during transport because the wheelchair securement was not done properly, the operator is dismissed from the contractor. That is one of the most important responsibilities that the drivers are entrusted with. So, you know, that's what happens. Now, so in other words, we're trying to say to you that we don't take that lightly at all. We take that so seriously that there are no second chances. If you do that and the customer's chair is not secure, then you can't be a Metro Access operator. And I think that's a very important thing for you to know. As far as the claims are concerned, damages to chairs and things of that nature or other property, you know, I'll say this much. One of the great things about this agency is that we have multiple avenues for you to get your complaints resolved. And when I hear stories like yours, that you talk to people who didn't help you, I become so disappointed that we couldn't connect with each other. Because if it had come to me, if it had come to David Schaefer, who's our ombudsman, who's seated in the back row behind you, or even to Mr. Sheehan, Ms. Rush, Mr. Semmelford, any of the people on the committee, any of us would have made sure that you were connected with our insurance group, which of course will now happen because we're going to come and sit with you after the meeting and resolve that. But it shouldn't be a big adventure for you to have to go find someone to deal with a simple claim. And we can easily take care of that for you. So I'm not sure why the people that you spoke to weren't helpful. We're going to ask you some questions about that because I want to find out why that happened so it won't happen to anyone else. On the Smart Trip cards, well, you know, we obviously wanted to do something good here. So we gave the Metro Access customers, after many years of using the free ride benefit, we gave them a smart card so they can have autonomous access to the Metro Rail and Metro Bus system. And as Mr. Blake said, if you have one of those cards now, you're supposed to be able to go into the bus and into the rail station and tap the card and go straight through. So unfortunately, once again, we're dealing with human beings who are making mistakes. If they stopped you and did not let you go through, then they were wrong. And that's something that we're going to have to correct. After a while, between you telling us and this committee telling the board and the drivers one at a time being corrected, word gets out. And then they go, oh, that's what I was supposed to do. Now, their supervisors tell them. But sometimes, you know, maybe they forgot or they weren't paying attention. But we take that very seriously. Those cards were sent out to our customers so that you would not have to be stopped when you go to ride rail or bus. That was the whole point of it. So if that is happening, that's a problem. And when you tell us about it, we're going to chase those people down and make sure that they are corrected and told the right thing to do. And I think sometimes the employees think that they're doing something helpful. If they stop you, they remember the past where we used to check ID cards. And some people just have trouble changing the channel in their minds. and we're going to have to tell them it's a new day. And we need to really use those cards the way that they were intended. To Ms. Witten's comment about the service area, you know, I sympathize with you because when I came to Metro back in 2005, Metro Access was serving the entire area of Prince George's County, Montgomery, and all of the Virginia jurisdictions in D.C., no matter where you were. The decision to change it to the three-quarter mile was a financial one. And so the truth of the matter is, you know, when people ask, and I'm saying this to the committee at the same time I'm saying it to you, you all have a choice about how you advocate for that. You could do either or both of the following. You could say, okay, to the elected officials, to the politicians, to the board members, the disability community needs more service, and we need you to open the arms of Metro Access wider. In which case, the response they're going to say is, you know, we're trying to be thoughtful and compassionate, but we ran out of money. So then the other alternative is to advocate for money. Now, the truth of the matter is, those of you who have been looking at the news and you hear about Metro's money problems, you know, we used to talk about how expensive Metro Access is to operate, but you notice now that the conversation now is how expensive all of Metro is to operate, right? So the issue really is that if the money were there, Ms. Witten, if it was not an issue of running out of budget to pay for the rail system and all the other issues that we have, Metro probably would have continued to operate Metro Access in all the places that we used to. So it really is a financial issue. And I think, you know, people who are trying to advocate need to hit that issue from both sides. So, you know, I think that's probably all that I was going to say in response to the comments, but I did want you all to know that for those of you, unless I, Ms. Keith, did I leave something out?
Yes, people were behind you who were told that their daughter wasn't on Metro.
Thank you.
And they were hours late. And
yes.
They were with the mayor at the bed.
Mm-hmm. That, yes. That's right. Thank you for that. And I apologize. I was really on a roll for a minute there.
I heard it up. I was
in good season. No, and I still want it. You know, not being able to find a reservation on the system that you've already made is frustrating for anyone. You know, I'm not sure how that happened, but the good thing I can tell you, though, about our system is that even if there was an error made by one of our people somewhere along the line, we can trace it all the way back to when the first phone call was made or the first reservation was made. So we can get the information from you and we can do a really thorough investigation.
Well, part of what I was asking was...
Chris, do you still have the mic? Because
I
If you want to come forward.
So
part of what I was asking is why would, when we're in Silver Spring and she's on a trip going to Northeast D.C., almost there, and the dispatcher told the driver that he had to go back to Silver Spring to pick someone up, and I understand about add-ons and that kind of stuff, but why can't they tell him while he's still in Silver Spring? Why do we have to tack on an extra half hour of travel? This happened twice with both of these examples. So it's the dispatching and who they choose to tell the go back and pick up somebody else when the first person is almost at their destination. No, I quite agree with you on that. I'm going to just share that problem happens more often when we are short personnel, which is something that we are now moving back into a better place with. But we also have Allison, who manages the contractor that runs the call center. So if the dispatcher made a mistake, we can at least trace back to who that person was, find out why they made that decision. But I will tell you one thing I'm going to ask. As a result of your comment and what Heidi has said, I am going to ask for a review of the process where an authorization is given to allow something like that to happen. That, you know, if there is a trip where we know that the routing is going to significantly impact the next trip, then, you know, I'm going to ask that we look into what capability we have to detect those situations and to intervene so that if a supervisor has to give a common sense instruction in the middle of a situation like that, they can do so. But that is something that I'm afraid we're going to have to get more information from you to kind of look at that situation that day and see what happens.
They also told me that I didn't get off on you.
Get out of another chair. And now, obviously, that's another driver training issue. And again, I will tell you that we take those very seriously. Whenever the driver shows, a pretty blatant misunderstanding of disability or how to do the job, that's where we have to come back. Are you saying a dispatcher told them to do it?
Yes, I told.
Yes, and that's the thing. The driver is ultimately responsible for what happens on that van. You know, if the dispatcher makes a suggestion, I mean, the dispatcher is supposed to give instructions on routing, where the vehicle goes, but the driver is responsible for how to interact with the customer. So, you know, I can only tell you that we are improving our training, and we're bringing a number of new people in, and as I shared with the committee, hopefully at a more competitive wage, and so that people will come in and do this job well. And then the ones who don't, you know, they're going to understand that, you know, it's a new day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank
you. Now, I know we're a little bit past 7:30. May you have the final word, because I need to let our interpreters go.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to remind members of the AAC and the public that the 2017 recruitment period is open. It opened today. Members who terms are up and want to reapply, that information is out there for you on the table. And, of course, members of the public as well. All are invited to apply. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. It's after 7:30. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those abstaining? Thank you, committee. Nice meeting. Nice meeting.
Stay late, but if you bring it back.